Welcome back to the Pro Charity Classic. Beautiful day for golf, wouldn't you say, Alan? Alan, we're live.
When you're distracted, you can't focus on what's important. Drive smart. Leave your phone alone. A message from ICBC.
The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at cooperadio.org.
Thank you so much, Jen and Sam, for joining us today on The Pulse. This is kind of an exciting little Downtown Eastside media panel here.
Thank you, man. It's good to be on the show.
Hi, David. Thanks for inviting us.
And as usual, our disclaimer that Jen and I are both funded by the federal government's Local Journalism Initiative to focus on Downtown Eastside reporting. And Sam, of course, works with Cited Media, which produces Crackdown podcast, and we've had them on as well. So it's a bit of a reunion. You published an article, Jen, on the Tyee on Friday, and I wondered what kind of new stuff did we learn about this? And could you kind of backfill us in on some of the context? Because you and I have both been reporting extensively on the Oppenheimer Park tent city and how it moved to Crab Park and now Strathcona and some of these neighborhood concerns that are bubbling up around these camps and around drug use in public.
Yeah, so, and I think that we also have to bring in the context of the COVID-19 pandemic and this and the measures that were taken to try to contain the pandemic that have also kind of pushed homelessness rates to also go up. So, you know, in March, when all of those restrictions were coming in, there were SROs kind of started having like a really strict visitor limitations. Some of the drop-in sites and community centers were closed. There was just sort of like a reduction in services. A lot of businesses were closed or like didn't have their bathrooms open. So just sort of like a number of services that people who were unhoused might have used in the past just weren't available to them. And so homelessness like sort of visibly increased in Vancouver. At the same time, there was a bunch of concern about Oppenheimer Park tent city, which had been there for 2 years. But there had been a lot of really concerning, you know, public safety incidents, assaults and crime happening there. So eventually in May, the province and the city worked to shut down Oppenheimer Park and to move some of the residents into various hotels around the city that they had leased or bought. And one of those was the Howard Johnson Hotel on Granville.
Now, of course, this makes a lot of sense, too, because the hotels were also, that hotel's already been used to house homeless people, and because hotels are just desperate without any guests during COVID and no travelers. So it seemed like an urgent response that came way too late to the problem.
Yeah, and it was, you know, people complain about tent cities and they have concerns about them, and then so I was watching this unfold, and then I noticed that when people were housed in the Howard Johnson, the people who lived around there were just really, really just had a huge amount of concerns and were very, very vocal about it and were able to get a lot of media on it. So there have been a lot of stories and there have been a lot of concerning incidents. Like, let's be fair, there have been, you know, a woman who was, she says she was chased by somebody who's threatening her while she was with her child. So there have been some like really legitimate, scary things that have been happening. But there's also been things that people say, you know, are complaining about, like open drug use, public drug use, and needles on the ground. And a lot of advocates are saying, well, you know, this is happening because people just literally have nowhere else to go. And so what do you want people to do? They have nowhere to go.
I wanted to start talking to you, Sam, about this group, Safer Vancouver, because they have been kind of speaking in the media and on the radio and on social media about the deteriorating situation in the Downtown East Side and Yaletown kind of raising alarms about drug users using in public. I wondered what you thought about that kind of discussion that's happening and also what you found out.
Okay, so this really piqued my interest sometime last week when I noticed that there was a relatively small Twitter account that didn't have, that had a website associated with it, but didn't have any, as far as I could tell at that time, listed spokespeople. You know, had somewhere in the range of like 600 Twitter followers or whatever. It was calling for an audit of all the service providers on the downtown east side. And they were having a more of an impact on the kind of like conversation about drug policy and poverty in Vancouver than you would expect for a group that kind of fit those characteristics. So, you know, just it turned out that there was a spokesperson who went by the name of Dallas Brody, and she was featured on the Linda Steele show on CKNW, which is pretty prominent radio show. And it also turned out that like the tweets that they were doing were being retweeted by the likes of Melissa DeGenova, Sarah Kirby Young, like city councilors in Vancouver, as well as other media figures. And it just felt like surprising to me that they were having this kind of impact in spite of the fact that I hadn't heard of them. I report on the downtown east side as my job, as do both of you often. And so it was surprising to me, and I thought it would be interesting to try to see what we could find if we looked a little bit more into Dallas and also the just like the group generally. I wanted to see where they were coming from. And so we spent a little bit of time a couple days ago investigating stuff. One of the things that we did is we listened to a podcast that that Dallas had done with a friend of hers. And it's really long. It's about 3 hours. And she kind of walks through her theory on the downtown east side. And I would say it's very gruesome and outlandish and out of step with the kind of like even what the right or conservatives in Canada think would be kind of an appropriate way to deal with the social problem of addiction.
It's actually outlandish to have a podcast of 3 hours. I think you would agree as well.
Well, yeah, I don't think I've recorded one, so I think I'm not going to be a hypocrite by saying that seems long.
Well, what kind of outlandish things were they saying?
But I feel like, you know, podcasters shouldn't throw rocks in glass houses. So I'll say no comment on the length of the podcast.
Right.
But I will say like one of the things that she said which maybe Jen could also talk about, because she wrote an article where she included this anecdote, is she talked about the possibility of taking people who use drugs and moving them into some kind of what she said a naval ship or a barracks, which are just sort of two examples of what she believes to be the solution, which is basically to take people who have been residents of this community that have tried to survive in spite of decades of evident and brutal government neglect, and have built, you know, to the best of their extent, a network of survival, to take them and just sort of remove them to some other place where they can't leave and they won't inconvenience other people in surrounding areas in the city.
Of course, this is an idea that's never been tried, and there is a large plot of land in Coquitlam called Riverview that is available, apparently.
Yeah, so that was alarming to me. And then the more that I kind of looked into Dallas's background, the more I, you know, we discovered that she, you know, while a lot of the rhetoric around what's going on in Vancouver has been that that the sort of like levels of poverty and homelessness have become inconvenient or scary or threatening to like quote unquote normal Vancouverites, I don't think it would be fair to describe Dallas as a normal Vancouverite. She's the daughter of Robert Gordon Brody, who was a prominent Canadian oil executive and a real estate investor. She seems to have grown up in Shaughnessy Heights and at least at one point owned a pretty expensive house there. She was a member of the Shaughnessy Heights Property Owners Association. I mean, she's very wealthy by any standards, and so one has to, you know, I think like when people are informing the conversation or they have an outsized voice in the conversation, it's very important for us to understand what their position is in this. Are they invested in real estate? Is there a bottom line interest that they have? Are they like, you know, what is their relationship to this community? What has it been over the years? And I think the more you dig into this one particular group and some of the associated groups, the more that these sort of questions come up.
Let's jump over to Jen. You also dug into this group, and I'm wondering, you know, you've reported a lot on Shaughnessy as well, which is one of the, if not the most expensive neighborhood within the city limits. What did you find about Safer Vancouver?
So I first became aware of Safer Vancouver about 3 months ago, I guess in May. There was a post on Reddit that showed a strata council had put up this notice in their lobby in Yale Town, warning about the Howard Johnson Hotel, that they were moving people from the Oppenheimer Park tent city there, and kind of just expressing concerns about needles and possible like disorder. And there were quite a few news stories, maybe not with Safer Vancouver specifically, but about you know, people's concerns about rising crime and street disorder in the neighborhood. I was just really interested. I saw this press release come in about a week ago from Safer Vancouver and this other group called Step Up. And that's when my interest was really piqued, because I've reported on Step Up before. They're a group that is sort of has its basis in Shaughnessy. They were formed to oppose the extra property tax that the NDP brought in on homes worth over $3 million. And you might remember that if you would drive around like Shaughnessy or the West Side, maybe in 2019 or 2018, you'd see these huge red billboards that kind of were like attacking David Eby's school tax.
I think a lot of people who are listeners might not have gone to Shaughnessy very often. Those signs say expropriation tax, they're taking our houses. They're everywhere.
Yeah, they were very big, big red signs that you would sort of see in like sort of this west side area that was really affected by the tax, because all the homes are worth over $3 million almost. So I was really, my interest was really piqued, because I was like, oh, this is interesting. The concerns have sort of shifted from Yale Town and just, you know, these concerns about all the stuff happening in Yale Town in the downtown area. And it somehow jumped to Shaughnessy. So I really wanted to look into that. And they were specifically calling for the audit on the downtown east side agencies, but specifically they were really attacking harm reduction. They were calling harm reduction a failed experiment. And, you know, harm reduction, we're talking about handing out clean needles to people, or safe injection sites, or safe drug supply. So they were really taking aim at harm reduction. And so immediately I was just, my interest was really piqued, and I really wanted to know more about both of these groups.
It's really hard to separate like fact from fiction around when these people come forward with stories, because it's definitely not hard to believe that there could be, you know, consequences of these tent cities relocating to places, or of the increase in drug deaths and desperation caused by the illicit drug supply. But at the same time, there was an incident in which people reported on a woman whose name was hidden and called Jane, who said that she was chased by a drug user. And then it came up that she's actually part of a group that has been advocating filming and kind of talking sternly to drug users in public. Sam, tell me about that kind of backdrop to this. Have you looked into that at all? And what did you notice about that kind of reporting?
I have, and I do. I sympathize with the people on this call, that the normal rule when you work in the media is to not take shots at other media members. And I work for a really independent group, and so I'm happy to say that there was a story produced by Jordan Armstrong at Global TV that to my mind falls well below the standards we should set for journalism in the city, which profiled a woman who said that she had been been attacked more or less while walking with her baby by a man who was going through a mental health crisis, and there was some video of that played on the news. And for some reason, even though this person was making an allegation, and there seems to be plenty of evidence that there are at least there's possibly two sides to this story, the person was given anonymity in the story and allowed to just be sort of the only evidence that this incident took place. And so my problems with the reporting around this are both the very simple standard that if you're going to have somebody allege a crime happened and you don't have a lot of evidence that it happens, as a journalist, it's extremely incumbent on you then that you seek for your sources to go on the record. So they're putting their own identities up as sort of collateral against the allegation they made. And we can all say, well, we think it's more likely to be plausible or true, the accounting of it, because the person's staking their reputation on it. That didn't happen. And what it turns out is that there seems to be some evidence that this person was a member of the one of the Facebook groups, Downtown Community Safety Watch, where people regularly post pictures of homeless people sometimes just walking down the street as an example of the disorder in the city. And there's been some good reporting in this city about the fact that a NPA board member, Christopher Wilson, who has been a journalist at Rebel Media as well, a far right media group, was in the same group encouraging people to quote unquote harass homeless people and people who use drugs as a kind of a tactic to achieve the political goals of the group. And I think when this happens, there should be a reckoning. Like, as a journalist, if you get played in this kind of way, or you don't have any of that context in your reporting, that you should probably come forward, and the new context should be as loud as the original story that went out there.
And that was the first half of our interview with Jen St. Denis, a Downtown Eastside reporter with the Taiyi.ca, and Sam Fenn, producer with Cited Media, which produces Crackdown Podcast. We're going to play the second half of this interview on our show tomorrow, so tune in to hear more, not only about this, but also housing projects that have controversially evicted tenants, and now the people who moved in are complaining about people on the street outside, as well as the ethics of media reporting on the neighborhood. Stay tuned for that tomorrow.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
After my heart attack, cash from ActiveCare meant I had choices.
When I had cancer, cash from ActiveCare meant I didn't need to stress so much about money.
What is ActiveCare? ActiveCare is a supplemental health insurance policy that offers protection for covered cancer, heart attack, or stroke, and a choice of cash benefit options from $10,000 to $60,000. If you're diagnosed with cancer, a heart attack, or stroke, you could end up paying thousands of dollars or more in out-of-pocket medical bills. ActiveCare gives you protection at an affordable price. So, get ActiveCare for cash, choice, and control. Active Care is brought to you by Colonial Penn Life Insurance Company and is underwritten by Washington National Insurance Company. Visit colonialpenn.com for more information. This is a limited benefit policy. This policy has limitations and exclusions. For costs and complete details of coverage, visit colonialpenn.com. Someone you know has probably experienced cancer, a heart attack, or stroke. The odds of experiencing one of these are high, which could result in bills for thousands of dollars in out-of-pocket expenses. How would you pay for it? With your savings? There is another option. It's called ActiveCare. ActiveCare is a supplemental health insurance policy that offers protection for covered cancer, heart attack, or stroke, and a choice of cash benefit options from $10,000 to $60,000. And with ActiveCare, the cash is yours to use as you see fit. ActiveCare is brought to you by Colonial Penn Life Insurance Company and is underwritten by Washington National Insurance Company. Get ActiveCare for cash, choice, and control. Visit colonialpenn.com for more information. This is a limited benefit policy. This policy has limitations and exclusions. For costs and complete details of coverage, visit colonialpenn.com.